We're back. Hour two, about 20 minutes in. Tony Black is going to join us. And Tony and I were kind of going back and forth earlier this morning. I was curious if Tony had gotten much word about the status of things in Philadelphia, because there had been some hopeful suggestions yesterday that as early as the week after this, the week of the 22nd, they might be able to get going at parks. And then a couple of other things to check in with Tony. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I just left the dentist's office, so your timing is beautiful. And like you said, it looks like there could be a probable date of the 22nd back to racing. The governor gave the clear go-ahead. But now we got to see what Greenwood. I just left the dentist office. Let's see what Greenwood's going to do. Because the ball's in their court. So we'll see what they're going to do. If they give us the clearance to go back to running, we'll be running, and hopefully by the 22nd.
With the backstretch back operating, have you gone over and ridden any and gotten on any?
I haven't gone over and ridden any. I did go over, though, and didn't get on anything, just kind of circulated and saw my man Richard Vega and some of my other close friends. I was going to go back over and get on some horses, and the other thing is the kids haven't had any school, and there's nothing. They're home every day, and I don't want to just leave them in the morning. Kylie will go back to work pretty soon. She's been home every day. But I guess she'll be on call to go back to work. My brother, he works in the office, so he'll be back pretty soon. He's going over there every day because he's had to take care of some loose ends. But, it's a tough situation. Nobody was prepared. You couldn't prepare for anything like this. I mean, it came unexpectedly. But even if you could prepare, you couldn't prepare. I mean, for the amount of time we've been off, this is really tough on those trainers and owners. And, you know, the care and the cost and the expense of the employees goes on, and there's nothing coming in. So I really feel for those people on the backside. But I even talked to a few guys, and they had minor complaints. And I said, you guys better put these minor complaints by the side and just hope racing gets back started. Even a couple jocks said, well, I don't like getting on horses with masks. If that's the biggest problem you got, then don't get on horses and go someplace else. That ain't a problem, you know. Wearing a mask isn't a problem. When you go through the stable gate, them taking your temperature, that's good, you know. It's a thing that should be done. And everybody's got to be cautious in this particular situation, and we sure don't want to spur it back up into full swing by doing some stupid things and too much getting together and not respecting social distancing. And wearing a mask ain't no big deal. Get used to it.
I've been watching. It's funny you bring that up, and we haven't discussed it, but the guys wearing masks in the afternoon, if anything, you would think it would keep mud and bugs and dirt out of your mouth. I mean, guys might do it even when this is over.
A lot of the guys, you know, wear those shields and weren't even wearing goggles at times. You know, this was before this whole thing. There's that shield you can wear that comes down in front of your face, and wearing goggles and wearing a mask, you know, it ain't going to hurt nothing. You can breathe. You know, there's nobody can tell me, oh, I can't breathe with this mask on. Well, you must have one that's made of cellophane, because I can sure breathe through a cloth, you know. There's no problem wearing the mask, but it's just people don't like change, and a lot of people don't like being told what to do. I'm one of those guys that certainly complies to everybody's requests. You know how easygoing I am, Steve.
There's no doubt that's true. That's you, Tony. We'll wait to see what's going on with Park.
I'm surprised you didn't.
You're easygoing.
I made that statement.
No, you're not that. Not at all. You absolutely are easygoing, and in an intense way.
That's a good one. I like that. I'm going to use that in the future.
You mentioned Rich Vega. Richie's down at Ocala, and he's buying himself some two-year-olds.
I know, and you know what? He usually comes back with some useful individuals. I told him he didn't text me back or answer. I said, buy me something that can run so I can win a race. I want to ride something just to make believe I'm a jockey again. But buying two-year-olds is really interesting. I've done that in the past and dealt with some people that respected my opinion by getting on them. And I also bought some for my first ex-wife and for some people that I rode for and raced for and had some success in buying two-year-olds. And what I like to do as a rider, and I did this before and really was either got lucky or just bought the right ones, I can remember going to Bob Bell's farm in Maryland, and he's the breeder of Dave's friend, you know, the Eclipse Award-winning sprinter, Dave's friend.
Sure.
And he raced in Maryland for many years, and he used to breed, I don't know, 10, 15 mares a year and had a beautiful farm and a half-mile, three-eighths of a mile racetrack. So one day he says, I know your wife's training horses. Why don't you come down and look at my two-year-old? So I said, well, they're yearlings or two-year-olds? He says, well, it's November of the year. They're going to be two-year-olds. So I went to his place in November. I got on about, seven, eight, 10 two-year-olds. I picked three that I really liked their way of going. And you can look them up because I remember their names. But the one that I liked her way of going, she was towed in real crooked in her left front and had a hot splint on the right side. I said, how am I going to buy a horse with a splint bone and toes in like this? I said, but I'll take these other two. One of them was Lion Tom, and the other was Marcus Pat. And then he says, well, give me $18,500 for these two. And I said, well, I really like that filly that's crooked, but I can't buy a horse that's conformation like that and got a hot splint, got a splint on the opposite leg already packed as big as my thumb, you know, sticking out as big as my thumb. And he says, so he calls me a couple weeks later. He says, well, when you come down to pick these horses up, if you still want that filly, just give me two more thousand. So I says, 20,000, what I was, 500. Yeah, all right, for 2,000, I'll buy her. Well, wound up, make long story short, she turned out, all of them wound up winning right away. You can look them up. Marcus Pat, Lion Ton, and The Minorities. They all wound up breaking their maiden for a high price, winning some races, got a couple of them claimed. The Minorities, the crooked leg filly I left on the farm till she was early in her three-year-old year and brought her back into training, you know, end of her two-year-old year and ran as a three-year-old. I entered her one day for a Philadelphia Park, where it was Keystone at the time. I entered her one day for like maiden 10, scratched her. I said, I'm running this filly for maiden nickel. We ran her for maiden nickel after I scratched her for 10, and she win by the length of the stretch. Make a long story short, she ran 13 times, she won 9 races, and she won all her conditions, A other than, 2 other than, and a 3 other than Merlin Bred race. So sometimes you can't always go by confirmation. You have to go by how they moved. And her, I couldn't believe that a horse with a big splint bone and a toad in that bad moved so smooth. And she lasted quite a while. You know, 13 races is all right for a horse that's built like her. But I also went to Ocala one year, and one of my ex-wives, I said, don't buy anything till I come down there and get on them myself. I said, and also, let me talk to some of these riders that get on them. She said, well, when you watch them, you see what the rider's doing on their back and how fast they're going. I said, that's a lot of BS. I said, because a rider that works these sales and is picked by certain people to ride their horses at these sales knows that time and how the time the horse is going in and how he's doing it is very important. And a rider that's experienced can make it look like he's doing nothing on a horse's back and he's asking them for their guts because of his hands and the way he moves on these horses. So not always when you think they're coming down the lane and going in 11 or 10 and change and they're bent in half, they ain't bent in half. The guy's a good poser that's on his back. You know, and you have to read into that. But it is very important if you do have the skill to get on horses and you have the okay to get on horses. That's the other thing. A lot of people don't want you to get on their horse before you buy them. It can be a benefit if a rider knows what he's looking for and is really monitoring what the horse is doing closely and he has some past experience with buying young horses.
What's your philosophy or thought process, Tony, when it comes to buying a race-ready, you know, a two-year-old in training purchase versus buying yearlings and projecting what they might turn into as a two-year-old and really, you know, starting with a blank slate, a clean canvas?
Well, when you're buying them and they're ready to run, you got to know who you're buying them off of, and you have to know what you're looking at because they are being, you know, out there training. So you must be able to look at them in training. I'm a little skeptical buying one that's ready to run that the guy wants to sell, and he could wind up breaking its maiden and racing it before you buy it and break its mating and racing it. You know, so, you know, he maybe knows what he has and he wants to get rid of it before it becomes a depreciable commodity, you know, because it's either not going to last real long, has some ailments, or can't just plain run very fast. But I like getting on or buying horses. Of course, everybody looks at breeding, but if you're going to buy strictly on breeding, you're going to pay through the nose. And the other thing is I like getting on horses that are late in their yearling year, coming two-year-old or early in their two-year-old year, and then judging them. Judging the way they move is one very important thing. What their respiratory system sounds like and feels like while you're on their back, and how they use themselves. Not breezing. You don't have to breeze them. But as you let them pick it up and gallop, how they use themselves, how they use their leads, how's their breathing? You know, do they sound like a freight train? Do they sound like they have great lung capacity? Or do they sound like they're huffing and puffing when they're just in an easy, you know, gallop, not even hitting a two-minute lift? You know, and then I also want to judge how they come back to the barn and how they act when it comes to packing up and getting them ready to go out. You know, is the anxiety, are they anxious, or are they laid back and don't give a damn? I love horses like that. Laid back, they don't care what you do when you're getting them ready. You walk them to the racetrack, they look around, they go to the racetrack, you know, and they don't care what's going on in front of them. They get on the racetrack, they start right off, they're willing to start off, their ears are flipping back and forth, they're not pinning them. You know, you monitor all that stuff, and if you've been on a lot of horses, you don't even have to look for that stuff. It sticks out. You can't help but to see it. You know, is this horse starting off, and is he starting off stiff? Is he starting off pinning his ears and looking around, you know, and doing everything like he hates what he's doing? Is he breaking out into a sweat before I even get him to the track and jog him and get him going around there? Or, like I said, is he laid back? Does he move smooth? You know, is his breathing good? Is his attitude good? Chances are he might be an okay racehorse. You know, you got all that stuff plays into it. But if you get on a lot of horses, that stuff sticks out. You're not like a person. Oh, I got to see how he's breathing, or oh, I got to see how he's moving. No, it's an instinct that you have. You feel how he's moving. You feel how he's breathing. You feel what his attitude is. If he's wasting himself with anxiety and discomfort, or is he just going out there and having a ball?
I love it. And it's everybody's got their own approach or you know, their own experience, Tony. And, you know, there's some that you basically are saving, quote unquote, a certain amount of money by buying a 2 year old in training that, you know, essentially is, you know, is ready made. And, you know, you look at repository, you get to look at, you know, scans to make sure, you know, you get to vet them, you get to look at their throat. I mean, you can do all the things, you know, that, you know, will make you comfortable with your purchase, prospective purchase. And, you know, if you buy a yearling, you know, it's not just the cost of the yearling. You're then going to fold in, you know, 6-7 months of training to get them ready for the racetrack. So, you know, there's potential, you know, bargain really in a lot of ways to buying a 2 year old that, you know, is essentially ready-made. And then there's the element of making a decision, This year, I'm sure everybody's going to go right on with their 2-year-old purchases for the most part. You know, given that the 2-year-old, you know, the 2-year-olds were so delayed getting redistributed. But you know, in a traditional year, the ones bought in February, March, April, you know, in some cases they might get 45, 60 days off. You know, kind of let them decompress because invariably they've been, you know, they've been leaned on pretty good to get ready for the training sales for the Breeze shows. So you know, there's that aspect. Other people, I've asked horsemen at this time of year, you know, what's your approach? Do you let the air out, or do you go right on with them? And everybody's got their own, you know, their own method when it comes to that.
Well, and you know what, Steve? They do have their own method. Same way I got my own way of looking at things. But the method should be something that you kind of indicate you want to do. But then the horse should dictate what he can do. And you put your method on the back burner if it means, you know what, this horse is cranked up, he's tucked up, he's done too much, he's a little bit on a hyper right now. Let me let him unwind, let me just back off, let me play with him, you know, and get him re-accustomed to not being drilled on a daily basis. And then you get other ones that never put much into it that you bring them over there and you say, listen, you're at the track. You're going to start doing more, and whatever my method is, I'm going to put that on the back burner. You ain't getting laid off and fat and sassy. You're going to start working a little bit and getting accustomed to what racing's all about. The individual kind of can dictate to you what you should do, and that's why they're called trainers. You know, they read what the horse is telling them, and if they fail to read what that individual is telling them, a lot of times they're going to make a mistake with that horse. And same way I tell these kids, these jocks that are learning to ride, you better learn how to communicate with this individual without him looking back at you and talking. You know, you have to read his body language. You have to read what his ears are telling you. If he doesn't have blinkers on, read what the back of his eyes are telling you. Read how he's hitting the ground. When he hits the ground, is he looking at something and ready to stick him in? And you'll go one way and he'll go the other. Or is he going right along and his legs are following the bit in his mouth where you want him to go? You know, you got to read all that stuff. Is this horse, as a rider, is this horse running off, or is this horse just exerting energy because he feels good and he's not nervous and he's doing it easily? You know, as a rider, rearing back and grabbing him and saying, well, I'm going to restrain him. You ain't restraining 1,100 pounds or nothing if he's not willing to be restrained. And when he's not willing to be restrained, is it nervous energy that he's expelling, or is it relaxed, good feeling energy that he just wants to play and go out there and exert himself a little bit? You have to read that as a rider, the same way a trainer has to read what that horse is telling him.
And that's really, you know, just the same as, you know, as any other portion of the relationship, you know, with a trainee and you know, the outfit. If you claim a horse, it's the same thing. You know, you're gonna get a feel for them and make adjustments, and it's an inexact science, to say the least.
That's absolutely it. It's an inexact science, and if you try to make it too scientific, and that's your fault. You know, you can't make it science so scientific that anybody could do it. You have to be able to, you know, read what's in front of you. Just the same way, you know, I tell kids that are riding, maybe that's what I got more experience riding, but I tell them, a lot of times you strategize what this race is going to set up like instead of going out there and feeling what it's setting up like. You know, instinct sometimes is, well, I always felt like if I rode instinctually, rode my races, I did a better job than when I strategized and tried to ride them according to an order or according to what I thought. Too much strategy sometimes it booby traps you, you know? Too much strategy. Sometimes you got to go along with instinct. And I'm sure trainers do the same thing when it comes to watching their horses go, a lot of trainers. You know, instinctually they get a feel for a horse and they see certain things and they interpret it as something they either like or they don't like.
Now, Tony, before we go, let me also ask you, how'd the rest of the cleanup go after after last week and the derecho that you got hit with.
Oh, I'll tell you what, I'm looking out in my backyard right now. I had a bunch of guys, tree removal guys, come, and it's still a mess because they're swamped. They got more business than they know what to do with. But $5,495 later, I'll have this backyard cleaned so I can see the back fence. Because these weren't no little trees that came down. These were gigantic.
No.
I mean, you can't even see the backyard for the last 7,500 feet of it because the plumage of the tree completely blocks everything out. This is a giant tree that came down. And it's sad because I feel bad for the old tree. I'm thinking, boy, but this old tree's been here. It was a sapling at one time, and now it's a 100-and-some-foot tree that toppled over. But it was kind to me. It come within inches of the roof of the garage, and I got two nice cars parked in the garage. And all it did was tear down a little bit of gutters and broke both sides of my back fence and my side fence. And it broke the swing set I made for my little girl, Matt.
Oh. So,
but we can't use the swings now anyway till we get this tree out of here. It's unbelievable what a storm of this nature can do in just a few minutes. It was a mess. And you gave me the name of it, and I told that to somebody, and they said, well, I never heard of that. And I said, well, that's what we got hit with.
and you know, no sooner, by the way, no sooner did that, it's kind of funny that what happened last Thursday, because no sooner had I invoked, you know, a weather phenomena, and I mentioned that we should reach out to Matt Shearer, the owner that is also a meteorologist, and he uses meteorology as a commodities trader, and I mentioned him, and we had talked earlier with Mike Beer, and had found his horse with Chuck Lawrence, that Perrette, and it made me laugh later in the day because then Shearer wins at 38-1. It was pretty funny. It was all kind of interconnected. And then there was another derecho apparently, somewhere else in the country. I read about one. And the same thing, you know, a relatively rare derecho, the craziest thing ever.
It was crazy. I mean, and they hit quick and hard, and they're gone, and all you do is see the aftermath. We have more, you know, there's people that's just got their electric back. We were only out 2.5 days.
Wow.
But there were so many telephone poles down, so many trees down into wires, so many trees down into houses. You couldn't believe the damage that this thing did in such a short period of time. And it seemed like just a, you know, very short period of time. And it's a disaster area. It's getting back on its feet.
It's
but the one people that really like it are the tree company guys. Boy, they are swamped. I can't get this
well,
guy
Steve
out
Haskett
here.
Is...
This guy can't come out for 2 weeks. He was here yesterday.
Unbelievable. Well, they're... I can believe it. It's that because it is a specialty. It's a specialty trade, undoubtedly. And they're busy anyway. Those guys clearing around here. They're constantly trimming around. You know, the powered lines for Niagara Mohawk and you know there's all kinds of brush that is always being. We had a freak storm. Similarly, I guess it was 2 weekends ago, and the cleanup was extensive, and parts of the countryside here was knocked out. I'm anxious. Steve Haskin is standing by, and Steve had gone up to Connecticut for the day, and so I'm curious because he's not far from you in Hamilton Square, and so we'll talk to Steve here next. And Tony, have a good week. I hope we firm things up at Parks, and we'll get that detail when we talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Keep up the good work and keep putting the good word out there, Steve. I love you, brother. You take care. Bye.
Love you, too. Tony Black, everybody. And we'll stay right here. Steve Haskett is standing by. And, Steve, did that storm, you were on your way out of town, right, to go see Theo?
Well, we left, we actually left Thursday. We stayed Thursday through Sunday. We've had several storms here. We had one storm, I'm trying to think when it was. It was like
this was last Wednesday.
It was like a hurricane. In fact, parts of the Jersey
that
Shore
was it.
Got wind gusts of up to 90 miles an hour, and I thought everything was going to blow down here. It was so bad. And it was like
that's what this was.
Jones said there was a name for this storm. I forgot the name of it.
Derecho. A derecho.
Yes, that's it. Derecho. Where the wind blows, where everything goes sideways. And, you know, you could look out, and, like, the street literally had, like, waves blowing across the street, waves of water. It was unbelievable. And Joan had run out to CVS to get something quick to try and beat the storm, and she didn't. She came back, by the way. You know, driving back, it's like being in a car wash. You can't see at all out there. I mean, she came back, and she was driving, you know, just pulling into the driveway and running through the garage, by the way. She was, like, soaked. I mean, it was brutal. And then she was just in the backyard, like, 15 minutes ago and looked out, and there's a huge branch laying back there. I don't know where the heck that came from.
Well, Tony, when we talked to Tony last, you know, you and I talked on Wednesday. We moved you up a day, and I'm glad we did. And we'll talk about the Santa Anita Derby in a minute, plus the sidelines that are strewn with injured 3-year-olds. But Tony joined us on Thursday, Steve, and he was in the midst of a cleanup, and he had huge trees, an elm and a maple that came down in his backyard, and that's what he was talking about just now. He still hasn't gotten them cut up and removed, but I saw pictures, and I'd never heard that word, derecho. And the next thing I know,
no, I haven't either.
It's a crazy, crazy thing.
Did you get the same thing up there?
No, we had a couple of small tornadoes that kind of whipped through the previous week. But what it is it's a wall of wind that comes in a straight line ahead of a thunderstorm bank. It's a remarkable. I read about them, and a couple of people sent me links, and it's amazing that, you know, between thunder snow and that whatever that other crazy winter inverted winter thing was, learning weather terms that you never knew existed.
It is weird. I mean, I don't know what's happening to the planet, but we are getting these weather phenomenons that with these names, you know, there was
right.
another name. There was another kind of storm. I forgot what it was called, by the way. I said, what the heck is that? I never heard of it. But there were all these names of these kind of storms. But yeah, this is weird. Where, you know, everything is blowing sideways. I mean, it's just it was really spooky looking, just looking out the window. And I thought, you know, watching our trees, you know, you know you're in a weird state, by the way, when you're actually feeling sorry for trees. I said, oh, my God, those poor trees. I mean, they were blowing so badly. I thought, how they staying up there is beyond me. I mean, can you imagine wind gusts of 80 tonight? And we were getting wind gusts of like up to 80 miles an hour. I mean, that's a tornado. I mean, a hurricane.
Well, we had the other problem that you're getting is you're getting rain for, you know, a couple of days, and then these storms come through. It softens the ground, and when the high winds come through, they're uprooting trees because the ground is soft. And we've got the same exact issue here. I mean, it's this was about 2 weekends ago, and Shushan and Salem, and there was communities that were without power for, you know, 36, 48 hours.
And like just driving through the neighborhood, there's like piles and piles of branches out by the curb, you know, huge piles of branches. I don't know. The planet's going crazy, just like everything else. Everything's gone crazy. But the weather, you just don't know what you're going to get.
Well, we don't know what we're going to get by the time we get to September, Steve. Are there going to be 20 horses to fit into that new gate?
What a total mess. I mean, listen, thank God I didn't have to do Derby Dozen this week, because I would have been racking my brains out all day trying to figure out who to put number two, Maxfield or Honor AP, and going back and forth, back and forth. I would have gone back and forth all day trying to figure out who to put number two. And one day later, it would have been all totally meaningless. It would have been a total waste of time trying to figure it out. But, I mean, you just
That's
don't
true.
Know.
Good
day
point.
To day. I mean, to lose as many good horses. Look how many good horses the Belmont Stakes alone has lost. I mean, supposedly it's supposed to be a classic, and you got, what, five out of the top 6 3-year-olds gone, not running in it, either injured or not running. Yeah, thank God for Tis the Law. I mean, we got to put him in a bubble wrap to make sure he stays healthy. You know, I was looking forward, like I said. I did an interview yesterday, and they say, "Well, you know, what are you looking for most in the Derby?" I said, "Well, look, right now, you know, you don't know what's going to emerge, but right now you've got a 3-pronged geographical confrontation, you know, with Tis the Law, you know, in New York, and you've got Honor AP in California, and you've got Maxfield in Kentucky." I said that would be a great showdown as long as they don't meet. Before then, it would be fantastic. Well, you know, that's gone. You just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, that's the pitfall of running the Derby so late. You start running these preps in March and April, and you have absolutely no idea what the scene is going to be like in September. I mean, it's totally different. You know, we're looking at horses coming up. You know, I mean, everybody. What was the odds? I mean, what was it? I think it was Cezanne was like the fifth favorite now. For the Derby, Wolf won 6.5 for a long maiden race. I mean, they're looking for anybody to come up. Baffert's lost 2 of his best horses, and the other one got beat. All of a sudden, you know, the most powerful Derby arsenal we've seen in ages is now down, and that's nothing. The 8 Rings is gone. Azul Coast ran terribly. Now he's down to a beaten Authentic and a horse coming off a 6.5 furlong a maiden debut. So things change very dramatically in this game, as you know.
Let's table the forward progress. We got all next week, of course, to look forward to it. But let's talk about what happened at Santa Anita. And Gary Young was on earlier, Steve, yesterday, a session and probably sale topping purchase.
$1,350,000.
Yeah. And I asked Gary, and one thing that Gary said that I thought was interesting, he did not dismiss and was basically telling people, don't be dismissive of Authentic out of this. He gave Authentic a little bit of a pass. Yeah. What were your
thoughts? I definitely gave him a pass. Let's put it this way. I don't care if there's 6 horses or 12 horses. When a horse is on the outside post, when they break out like that, that takes so much out of them to have to recover. Because, you know, they jump, they change leads. You know, when they jump out like that, they've got to completely straighten themselves out. I mean, you have a horse that needs to be close to the pace. No matter how it looks, you've got to use him. And he wound up going wide into the turn. And, you know, there were 2 other speed horses in the race, so he had to sit outside both of them. I definitely give him a pass. Again, I'm not crazy about his pedigree for 1.25 miles, but I can't dismiss him. I'll tell you another horse, by the way. If you look at the chart of the race, you'll see that his margins, the margins he was behind, was 1.5, then 1.25, 2.75, 3.5, and 4. Sounds like he was losing ground the whole way. But you watch that race, by the way, and watch how Rushy kicks in and just finds his gears in the last 1/8 of a mile and levels off, and the way he's running, the way he's striding out at the finish, that's a very he ran a very deceptive race. I wouldn't. If he had a clear outside run like Honor AP did, he would have been right. He would have been right there. But he was behind horses. Honor AP, they were moving together at the same time. Honor AP had a clear run, and he had a, you know, he had three horses in front of him, and it looked like he was going. No, it looked like he was going to finish fifth, and he just kicked in. It's like a fresh horse, and he actually made up two lengths in the last eighth of a mile on Authentic. So it was a very deceiving race. But listen, Honor AP is, you know, is getting really good, and he's obviously legitimate. He just has such an unusual way of running. You know, he's so unmistakable when you see him run with that low action, and, you know, he's got a strange stride, especially that's emphasized by those two white legs in the front. So it's hard to really gauge how he's striding out with those two white legs, but, you know, he really gets down low, unlike Authentic, who runs high. So it's like such a totally different style of running. But no, I mean, I think all three horses in the San Diego Derby definitely going to move forward. It doesn't take much to move forward nowadays. You got to run pretty bad to be eliminated from Derby consideration.
I guess you're right. And of course, you know, we do have bubbling under the surface any number of horses that, you know, are in the allowance rank, or, you know, recent, you know, somewhat recent maiden winners, and they're going to start to, you know, I see where Cezanne has immediately been kind of installed as, you know, as a, you know, late next level candidate.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. I think he's like the fifth choice or something, you know. And I said, yeah, you know, that's crazy. Let's put it this way: let's say the most he can do is go into the Derby with three lifetime starts. So he can only run two more times, and one of them is going to be a sprint. You know, historically, it's not what you want. Yes, Justified did it, but there's a big difference, and people seem to think that because Justify won the Derby off only three career starts, that Cezanne can duplicate that. And he very well may, if, you know, if he's that good. But there is a big difference between the two. You know, sure, Justify was lightly raced, but so, when he ran in the Derby, so many horses he ran against, at least relatively speaking. Most horses are light on experience going into the Derby because of the nature of the sport today. But come September, Cezanne is going to be running against far more experienced horses than Justify did.
Of course.
With a lot more stakes under their belt. He's going to be running against Travers and Haskell winners who are now mature enough to take on older horses. So he's going to have only three starts, but he's going to be running against really, you know, hard-knocking, veteran, experienced horses who have been running all year. At least we hope. We hope so. And also, you know, listen, it may be nothing, but, you know, you always look for little things. But if you watch the head-on of his allowance race, look at how many times he tries to lug out and has to be hit right-handed each time. And it could be just greenness. It's very possible. But even if it is, it's going to take a professional horse to pull this off, what he's going to be trying to do to win the Derby with three starts in September. And, you know, Justify, in addition to being brilliant, was very professional. And some horses will shy from the whip and duck in or out. You know, you can accept that. But I'm just not crazy about seeing the young horse continuously bearing out on their own without, you know, without the whip. The only time he was whipped is to keep him from lugging out. But we'll see how he progresses. He's obviously very talented. You know, he didn't like blow his field away, but he looked good doing it, except for the fact that when you look at the head on and you see him three times, he tried to lug out in a stretch. So see what he does next time. See if he matures and see if it's, you know, no more than that. But like I said, it's asking a lot, you know, for a horse. It's a different, totally different scenario than when Justified did it.
Well, Steve, we got to look toward next week, and just actually checking with with Andrew Burns at NYRA. Sol Vellante appears like he is going to run. Got a 95 buyer
yesterday. I wouldn't count on that. I mean, he may, but I don't know. I don't know if they're going to want to, you know, I mean, listen, he may run, but again, like I had mentioned earlier with Maxfield, whether he goes, it all depends on whether you, you know, do you really look at the Belmont as a classic race? Or are you just looking at it in name only? You know, if you have a horse like Sol Vellante, do you want to run him back-to-back one turn? I mean, I don't know. You would think, you know, to start gearing up for the Derby, you know, you give him a little more time and run him two turns over a track that's more conducive to a come-from-behind horse than Belmont is, going 1.8 miles in one turn. I mean, it's very difficult for a horse to come from far out of it at Belmont at any distance. You know, going one turn 1.8 miles, where all the horses to beat are all horses that like to, you know, to, with Tis the Law in there and Tap It to Win. You know, I can see those horses just getting out there and just keep going. You know, it's very hard. You know, you see these come from behind horses at Belmont. You know, they go into the far turn and they make this big move on the turn. And you say, oh wow, look at this big move, and then they just peter out in the stretch. Because that big turn takes its toll eventually, and it's so hard to go wide. The only way you can go wide at Belmont at the quarter pole is if you save ground the entire way and then fan out at the quarter pole. That's the way you come from behind. But if you go into that far turn 3-4 wide and you make that big move, boy, it's hard to sustain it. You're taking a lot out of yourself. And the question is whether Bianco wants to run him back in 10 days. I mean, he ran 1.34 in 4, and it wasn't an easy race. It wasn't an easy race. Well, there's some good horses in there. I'll tell you one thing, by the way, is that Chivalry, in my opinion, really, really boosted Tis the Law. You know, everybody was knocking Tis the Law. Ah, he beat an 80-1 sprinter in the race, and, you know, he ran second to him. And I tell you, that horse ran a phenomenal race. To go head-and-head in 45 flat like that with ATA Indian and just putting him away and getting beat by a length and a half. I mean, I thought Chivalry ran. He proved himself to be a very legitimate horse. Now, again, the second horse, you know, Jesus's Turn, looked like he was, you know, overmatched coming off claiming races. You know, he was coming off a $25,000 claiming race. But he was in good form. He was winning those races. He's winning his last few races impressively. And you know, any kind of horse can come off a claiming race and run huge. But I love Sol Vellante. I've had him like in the top anywhere from number 2 to number 5 all year. I just love the way this horse runs. Absolutely love it. I can't knock this horse. He is so light on his feet. He's so quick-footed. He has such a turn of foot. He can come from way out of it like he did here, because he looked like he was totally beaten at the quarter pole. Or he can do what he did in the Sam Davis, where he makes a huge run on the turn and he's right on top of you, turning for home. But he has such a beautiful stride to him. And again, if you watch the head-on, he runs absolutely perfectly straight. You can't run a straighter course. And you watch his legs. He keeps his legs under him so well. You know, there's no paddling. There's no off-stride. There's no turning of the head. He just does everything right. He's just a pleasure to watch. When I saw him win the Sam Davis, I was like, wow, I was really blown away by that race. And even in his Tampa Bay Derby, I thought he ran great, which was Bianco put him in there basically as a learning experience to have him get through traffic. And, you know, he closed well, and he got beat by a really good horse. So, I mean, I was very impressed. I was shocked to see him in this race. I thought Bianco would just train him up to the Belmont Stakes. And that's it. But, you know, to run him in here, I don't know if you want to get a horse into a habit, you know, of running in back-to-back one-turn races. You know, then start gearing up for the Derby. But we'll see. I mean, I listen, if he goes, he goes. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them skip the race and go to Bluegrass. And I tell you, I hope for the Belmont's sake, for Naira's sake, he runs. Because if he doesn't run, I mean, that race is just dwindling down day by day. You know, Governor Morris is now not going. We don't know what Basin is doing. I mean, he might not go. Who's left? Dr. Post, Farmington. I don't know.
Well, right now, Andrew Burns, I've got Basin, Dr. Post, Farmington Road, Max Player, Modernist, Solvalanti, Tap It to Win, and Tis the Law.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good race. It's not a classic field, but I don't know if there are how many classic horses are around. If I had to do a Derby Dozen right now, I could come up with the top four or five, and after that, I'd say pick them. Pick it. Put anybody you want there. There aren't... I like Modernist. I think he's a horse with a bright future. I think, you know, he looks good. We don't know how good... Tap It to Win is... you look at his past performances, and I would like to talk to Mark Cassidy and say, what the heck happened in those two 10th-place finishes? We got beat 40-something lengths and 20-something lengths. You know, he looked like a terrific horse in the two races before that, and he's looked like a terrific horse in the two races after that. But those two races, last fall, was just, like, so horrendous. Yeah, I don't know what happened to him, but he was very impressive. And listen, he gets loose on the lead in the Belmont, even though he's not a stakes horse. He could keep going, but... You know, Tis the Law is going to have him in his sights the whole way. And Modernist is going to be close to the pace. But, I don't know, we'll see. You know, Dr. Post, he could be any kind. He showed a lot in his last race. Overcame a lot of traffic and bumping. And, you know, it was a very impressive race. But he's never run against horses, you know, this caliber. So we don't know how good he is. And Farmington Road, to me, again, one turn... Mile and eighth is going to be at a disadvantage coming from far out of it. So, you know, I could see Pletcher taking Gouverneur Morris out. You know, why run three in here when you've got the Bluegrass Stakes? So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to have. I don't know how many horses they're going to have. But, you know, it looked like when it was Tis the Law against Nadal, you know, it looked like right at that point it was going to be a sensational race. But then you start thinking, well, Tis the Law versus Charlatan, you lost that. Possibility of Maxfield running, we lost that. So, you know, right now, let's put it this way, 3-4 weeks ago, I don't think they were expecting a 7 or 8 horse field.
No,
and it depends on how you look at it. You know, is this really a Triple Crown, or you have three classic races? I don't know how the Triple Crown is going to be perceived this year. You start looking at the Preakness, by the way. What's the Preakness going to look like? Is that going to be a race that's just like hanging out there? Just, you know, after the Derby? How many horses who run in the Derby are going to wait and go straight into the Breeders' Cup Classic and not even want to bother running in the Preakness? So I don't know what's going to happen in the Preakness. I hope they get a great field. I love the Preakness. But where it's situated on the calendar, I just don't know who's going to be pointing for it. I don't know. I think the Derby's going to be a great race. You know, that'll be classic worthy. But if you look around the globe, I may be wrong, but I don't think there's a single mile and eighth classic race anywhere in the world, no matter where you look, no matter what country. Classics just aren't run at a mile and eighth. So... You know, it's the Belmont, but it's not the test of the champion, and it's not what it was obviously intended to be. But there's nothing else. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, you have to do what they did. You have to run it there and hope for the best. And thank God, at least they got Tis the Law in there.
Well, and it's going to be a nice day of racing. In addition, looking at the Woody Stevens, the Jiper, and the Acorn, Benign Ridge.
Woody Stevens is going to be a good race. There are several horses nominated to Woody Stevens. You were talking about upcoming, you know, allowance type horses. There's several horses nominated. I don't know if they're going to run into Woody Stevens. I mean, I'd love to see these horses go two turns wherever they may go. But, you know, Christophe Clement's got a horse, Casino Grande, who's undefeated in two starts, who I thought looked really, really impressive at Gulfstream Park last time out when he won an allowance race going a mile. I really liked his race a lot. And there's a horse called Art Collector, who he's come off the grass, and he's looked really good in his last two starts. The last race was very impressive at Churchill Downs, 7 furlong allowance race, and he won going away. Very impressed in a very good allowance field. We beat Toledo and Wrecking Crew, and he just drew off in those horses in 122 and change. So, you know, I'm looking, he's by Bernardini out of a Distorted Human mare. You know he wants to go long. So I don't know what they're gonna do with him. You've got a horse that I've been in love with for a long time now named Sonoman, who I think is a very, very impressive horse. Tom Amos has got a horse who's hot right now, No Parole. So, you know, he's by Violence out of a Bluegrass Cat mare, so you figure he wants to go long. So I'm looking at the Woody Stevens. Like I said, I don't know who's going to run in here because it's time for these horses to go two turns, but we'll see how many of them go seven.
Well, No Parole's not going. He's not stretching out No Parole. He's already tried that.
Yeah, but sometimes horses improve. I mean, he's bred to stretch out, but you know, regardless of what they do, I mean, whoever runs into Woody Stevens. But I'll tell you, you watch and see how many horses who run well into Woody Stevens come back into Haskell, because the Haskell is a two-turn race conducive to speed. So I think the Woody Stevens is going to prove to be a very, very good prep for the Haskell, which is what Baffert wanted to do originally, remember, with Charlton. He wanted to run him into Woody Stevens and then the Haskell. So, horses coming from a 7 furlong race at Belmont Park are going to be really sharp, stretching out to two turns over a track like Monmouth Park. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in Woody Stevens. But just, when you watch this race, don't think these are sprinters. Watch for these horses stretching out in the Haskell.
Well, and the three-year-old fillies for the Acorn. We got the turf sprint for the Jiper. It's still going to be it's a nice big Saturday, given the intensity of this meet.
I'll tell you one thing: if we lose any more horses, don't be surprised to see Swiss Skydivers alter course and start running against the Colts. I mean, I don't know if she's a mile and a quarter filly or not, but, I mean, she's very talented.
Well, Kenny, they nominated her, right? They took the late nomination. And actually,
exactly.
Steve,
yeah.
You know, that,
Kenny
before
McPhee,
we go.
You know, he'll try anything. What's that?
Yes, before we go, in fact, was there any other names on that, among those 20-plus late nominees? Anybody else that caught your eye beside the filly?
I don't think so. Not really. I can't even remember who was on the list, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I'm going to pull it back up. I didn't get a chance to... here we go. 22 was the number. The late nominees. Alex June from Steve Asmussen, American Piper, Long Valley Stables, Rick Buckley, Bear Alley, Ferdale Romans, Casino Grandi that you mentioned, Clement, Cezanne was a late nominee. They didn't think he'd possibly be ready. Collusion Illusion, the Mark Glatt. How about that? Edge of Fire, Jimmy Jerkins, Mike Stidham with Established.
I think he's nominated for Woody Stevens, too.
Yeah, Established, High Cruise for Calumet and Jack Sisterson, Hunt the Front from Nick Zito.
Watch out for that horse, by the way. I think that horse is running Friday. At least he was supposed to run Friday. I have to check the entries, Hunt the Front. Nick had texted me and said that he last weekend and said that he was going to run Friday. That horse has got, you talk about a turn of foot. First of all, he comes from way, way out of it. But he's got a turn of foot where he can make up ground really fast. And he had run like 3 consecutive seconds in maiden races. And he just ran into horses that just opened up on him. He wasn't able to catch him. But, boy, can he motor. And then finally, in the last race, he put it all together, and he was finally able to break his maiden. This horse has got so much bottom under him. I'm really curious to see him run. Watch out for him. He's got the pedigree. He'll run all day. And I'd love to see Nick back on the Derby trail.
Well, that race, I had not looked at Churchill's Friday card yet either. And the eighth race tomorrow, a 12-horse field, and among there's a number of horses that people are going to be familiar with, including Wrecking Crew, who has just gone kind of sideways. Man in the Can shows up in here for Moquette. This is a interesting group.
Is that the Hunt
Sharecropper for Al Stahl? Yeah, Hunt the Front, the eighth race on Friday.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep an eye on that race. But I'm really
heady bunch.
To see how that horse runs.
Well, then you look forward to that. 4:46 post time on Friday at Churchill, and actually there's a nice starter. That comes ahead of it with some hard hitters as well. It looks like a nice card. I'd been focused on Belmont, but
that's the one thing.
This is
that's
all
the
right.
one thing now. That's the one thing now. By the way, is that you've got to look at the entries every day. You never know what's going to be.
Oh yeah.
You never know what allowance
that's for
is
sure.
Pop up and who's going to be in it. I mean, there could be a Derby horse running any day of the week.
That's right. That's right. Well, this is a really good card now that I'm looking at it more closely. There's a Turf Mile that has got Bally Rocks, the Mott veteran, who's going to probably be favored in here. Set Piece from Brad Cox, Limonite, who's kind of trying to find something to do. Crew Chief. There's a whole bunch of familiar names in here. Nice. Something to look forward to tomorrow as well. Steve, let me just getting a word, by the way. I asked Dean Reeves the status of Sol Volante, and I'm sure Dean won't mind my reading this. It says, doing well this morning. Patrick and Dean will decide by Saturday whether he will run in the Belmont.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is he'll leave it up to Patrick. I think the one thing that really surprised me, by the way, is that if you look at both these races, the races that were run this past week, AT Indian, by the way, what was it 3-5 in that race? And Patrick put blinkers on the horse that he had trouble rating this horse. That was his main problem. He couldn't rate him, and he put blinkers on him, and he got worse. Yeah, he goes out there. Yeah. He goes
well,
out there
and he was confronted.
Yeah, how he went off at 3-5, you know, with Sol Volante and Chivalry in there is beyond me. And I to tell you the truth, I also couldn't understand. You know, I can understand obviously Authentic being a favorite, but 1-2 against Honor AP, running in there with Shoot and Shoot in there. And with Anno Dor, you know, with certainly speed and him drawing the outside, granted, he should have been the favorite, but 1-2, I thought there were two really two horses this past week that were way, way, way too low in the odds.
I agree. Steve, before we go, I got to get to Dick Powell. How is the baby? How's Theo?
Oh, unbelievable. I can't wait to go back. It was so hard to leave. I don't want to sound biased, but he is the most adorable kid I've ever seen. He is so cute. He's so sharp.
he can't be cuter than Mandy.
What? Yeah. Well, yeah. That's
he can't
true.
Be cuter than Mandy was.
That's true. Yeah, well, and in a male version, in a male version of Mandy. If you can hear him singing "Country Road," I mean, he goes. And when
cute.
He comes to the place where I belong, when he goes belong and he shouts belong at the top of his lungs, and then he goes Mountain Mama and he pulls a Joe Cocker routine. He's shaking his head and shaking all over the place. Just watching him sing that song, by the way, is hysterical. He's such
That's
a fun
correct.
Kid. I don't want to go overboard, but he really is a fun kid. And
Well, he gets he's got the acting chops from the acting chops from his dad, and the dancing chops from Manny.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got plenty of stage.
Yeah, very talented parents. And nice. I don't know if you've ever been to Weathersfield. Oh my God! I feel like I'm back in.
Of course, I've been to Weathersfield.
Stars Hollow and Gilmore Girls or something. You know when Weathersfield was founded, by the way? 1634.
I grew up across the rivers. I grew up, went to school with tons of kids from Weathersfield, and went to school in Hartford.
Oh, were you in Glastonbury?
Of course, Manchester, right next to Glastonbury.
Oh, okay. By the way, speaking of that, by the way, Mandy West is already showing us photos of condos.
Oh, that's not a bad idea, Steve. That's not the craziest idea.
It's hard to leave a house after 37 years, but if we can clean out all the junk in his place in a year or so, which I don't know if we can, but if we do, I know Joan is gung-ho and they're gung-ho.
Oh, that'd be great. You should do that.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense.
A lot of nice condos around there. So they were showing us pictures online of some of them. So, you know, it's certainly something to think about. And even if not, by the way, three hours door to door. I mean, it's just an easy drive there.
Sure. Steve, I've got to go because I've got to still get...
You know, from Saratoga, we want to go straight there.
That's true. You're that much closer. And you're close to Avi and Rhoda.
Well, we stopped at Avi and Rhoda's on the way back. We had a great visit there. We stayed there like a couple of hours, just sat on their back porch and just talked, social distancing, of course. But, we just sat out there, had a great visit, right on the way. Just get right off and... Zip there, and he zipped right back on the Merritt Parkway. So it was great visiting them. It was exactly 1 hour from door to door. They're an hour and a half from my brother-in-law in Boston, an hour and a half from my sister-in-law in Vermont. So, I mean, they're in a great, location.
You've answered every question, and there's nothing keeping you in Hamilton Square anymore. So what's the point? Make the move.
I can't think of anything, except for a few of our favorite Italian restaurants. That's about it.
We'll set you up at First and Last in Hartford, which is terrific for Italian.
What is that?
All right, it's an Italian restaurant. The whole north end of Hartford is nothing but Italian restaurants.
Oh really? Oh, that's good to know.
Franklin Avenue.
Okay, well, I figured you know something about the area.
I lived there 20 plus. You know, I grew up there essentially. Yeah, I mean that's where I grew up.
Not only that, by the way, but you realize how close they are to New Haven, which is like the pizza. Next to New York is probably the pizza capital of America.
Well, it's the founding root source of pizza in this country. The Appice, from starting with Frank Pepe and Sally's and Modern, I can give you places that nobody knows about. I don't give them publicly because I don't want them to get more crowded than they already are. When it comes to that,
can give them to me privately.
All right, we'll give you one in over by Savin Rock is kind of a hidden gem that comes from the same.
I'm game.
From the same source. All right, Steve. Thanks a lot. Let me get Dick in here, and I got to get to Rich Eng this morning yet as well. Steve Haskin, everybody, and we'll keep tabs on how this Belmont Field. If there's going to be more than more than eight, still going to be a great day. We'll be there next week broadcasting too. Thank you, Steve.
Take care.
Steve Askin. We'll stay here.